This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. It's now 8:47. You're listening to The Morning Run with Julian Ng, Tan Chung Han and me, Melissa Idris. Yesterday, Bank Negara released its 2016 annual report and its financial stability and payment system report. And we found quite a number of interesting findings with that. Taking a look at how they view the economy for their outlook for the Malaysian economy, they're saying they foresee a challenging year ahead because although GDP growth is expected to accelerate, headline inflation is also expected to rise.
All right, let's focus on our GDP real quick. So I don't know about you guys, but when I'm out and about, you know, I often get this question. People ask me, hey, how's the economy doing? Huh? Better. You know, so now we have an updated answer from the central bank. And the answer is, it's expected to get better. What does that mean in number terms? 4.2% GDP for last year, that's the growth. For this year, is expected to range between 4.3% to 4.8%. So essentially, the outlook, you know, is calling for a rebound. But, you know, yes, I think it's also important to note what while headline GDP growth is expected to grow faster, yet inflation as well is expected to see a similar trend from about 2.1% last year. This year is expected to range 3 to 4%.
So it's a good news, bad news situation. On the one hand, you have that growth growing. On the other hand, creeping inflation. Interestingly, also, Bank Negara, according to news reports, did not provide a target to the ringgit. I guess that's on everybody's minds. Very worried about where the ringgit would go. But this refusal to provide a target, I think many times markets read too much into what Bank Negara says. But I guess we need a kind of policy direction going forward so that we can plan our lives. Apparently, Bank Negara has also used an assumption of 430 to 440 in their annual report. But this is more of an assumption for the current state of being, but not a future. Not the future.
Yeah, and ultimately, you know, what this means for, you know, those listening, also for, you know, all of us here in the studio, is that this, the weaker ringgit, is being cited as one of the factors for rising inflation this year as well. The other factor being the rebound in oil prices that we've seen. January inflation came in at 3.2% on year. For February, it's expected to come in at 4%. So that's almost double what we saw the average for last year. And essentially, one of the big drivers for that is the jump in RON 95 prices, right? Up to 2 ringgit 30 cent per litre. So we'll find out February's official data at noon today.
Yeah, and now going forward, the government's going to be setting the ceiling price for petrol on a weekly basis. So, you know, taking into account any volatility. The Bank Negara governor also said that inflation is expected to remain, you know, at the high end of the 4% range, but looking to taper off towards the end of the year. But talking about policy signals, Julian, the governor of Bank Negara, also gave some policy signals as to corporate governance. He said at a press briefing yesterday that with regards to corporate governance in the banking sector, Bank Negara will now take a stricter approach towards naming and shaming offenders. So they're going to say who committed any offence, what the reason was, and how much the fine is going to be.
I think the 1MDB saga brought a lot of behind the scenes goings on out of the woodwork. We saw many staff connected to the 1MDB in Singapore banks, for example, being banned from a lifetime or at least a decade and a half service from the banking sector. Many banking licenses were taken away. And over here, it also exposed some weaknesses in the system, as witnessed by the CIMB review of the $7 million that went through Nazir Razak's account. The question is whether that was a tip of the iceberg to the practices of the entire banking industry. This naming and shaming move, I think, is a very good thing.
Yeah.
One step closer to bringing our system to more transparency.
Another interesting point in their report as well was the fact that youth unemployment has been on the rise in the country. So it is estimated to have reached 10.7% in 2015. That is over three times the national unemployment rate of 3.1%. Now, if you look at the jobless youth, you'll see that graduates make a relatively large portion of unemployed youth. So jobless graduates are about 23%.
Yeah, just to clarify here, so the youth is defined as those between the ages of 15 to 24. At least that's Ben Negara's, or the definition that Ben Negara is using. And so they've got an interesting box article here in the annual report, basically underlying the reasons for the lack of employability, you know, for Malaysian graduates. But it's nothing new, really. You know, we have heard these so very often, and now it's coming from the central bank again. You know, everything from their inability to communicate effectively, or, you know, their unwillingness to work for certain jobs. And so, you know, when you see these kind of trends, it does pose a cause for concern, because, you know, when you consider the fact that domestic consumption is being relied upon to prop up economic growth, you know, moving forward, especially for this year. But when you've got so many economic participants who are out of the labor force, they don't have money in their pockets, how are they going to, you know, spur the kind of economic activity that we need to hit that GDP target of 4.3 to 4.8%, eh?
You know, what I find interesting about this is that we always talk about the problems of an aging society around the world, including countries like Japan, Singapore, and so on, that the old people would not have enough money to support themselves because they will be out of that workforce. But here in Malaysia, we have the great big youth unemployment, the masses of youth unemployment. And I think the pertinent question to ask here is this the fault of the youth, or is this the fault of policy, right? Because the answer to that question would lead to very, very different policy measures. And to this end, the government is trying to suggest, are they adamantly implementing the unemployment insurance scheme?
Yeah, well, so there's news yesterday that the federal government had agreed to implement this proposed employment insurance scheme. It is going to affect at least about 6.5 million workers in the private sector. So the idea is that the bill was proposed because the government's worried that, you know, in an economic downturn, companies will be forced to retrench workers. So the scheme is sort of a contribution from employers and employees to pull into a fund. I think SOXO is going to be managing it. And then if you get retrenched, you get some benefits, you get financial aid and some kind of reskilling so you can look for a new job.
Yeah, and I think to set the context here, look, we have a relatively tight labour market here. Unemployment in Malaysia as of last year was 3.5%. Now, granted, it is higher than the 3.1% that we saw in 2015, but still in a relatively tight labour market. So I think the issue here is this, though. Is it fair, if I may use that concept there, is it fair for the rest of us who are employed, and for employers, responsible employers, to then, you know, provide for the safety net of those who are unemployed? What about the concept of, say, personal responsibility? You know, you are out of a job, you better have savings, you take care of your own welfare.
Well, okay, so let's think about it this way, right? So SOXO was created to help, you know, it's the same kind of idea, right? SOXO is the employer gives a contribution, the employee gives a contribution, put it into SOXO. So in the event that you get injured at work, you have some kind of insurance, right? This is the same kind of concept. So, you know, you pull money together, and in the event you lose your job, you get some kind of financial aid. But when I think of a social safety net, I think of the government. I don't think of it's the employer's duty to provide a social safety net. I don't think of private workers' duty to provide a social safety net. I think that governments should provide social safety nets for those who get unemployed. For instance, overseas with you know, social security services, you've got the DOLE, unemployment aid. So, I don't know. I mean, what do you guys think?
It's hard to sometimes separate the government as though it was a different entity, right? The government is us. It consists of citizens and corporations alike.
And it gets their money from us. Yeah,
yeah, and the government is a representative of us. So while you quote those nations in the Scandinavian countries who pay a lot of social safety net, although that's coming from the government imposes a very high tax on the corporations so that those programs get well-funded. So the question here is now whether the government should tax corporations in order to establish a kind of social safety net. And I think that's a debate that will continue into the years. But this EIS, this employment insurance scheme, is a first step towards that. I think this problem is a tip of the iceberg for Malaysia. And interestingly, the comments that have come out from the employers themselves have been largely negative. But interestingly, they don't disagree with the concept because they don't think it works. They disagree with it because they're afraid of the freeloading problem. They're saying that a big part of this pie is borne by hardworking people and the money is going to people who are out of jobs, and they think that is unfair. I think that's truly missing the point. I think that we should learn to help each other out. People who are down and out or who needs a little bit of support while they're in hard times, I think that's a good idea, don't you?
No, yes, but that good idea assumes that these people were unemployed due to external factors. The criticisms that have been laid against these kind of social security nets is this, because then if, let's say, you are unemployed, right, and then you go on this EIS, again, I don't know.
You get fired.
You willfully become lazy just to take advantage of the insurance. Like under SOC, so you willfully injure yourself. But this is the same thing. Right? One is physical and the other one is physical.
I don't know if I'm willing to chop off a pinky just to claim that my SOC sole benefits. But unemployment is different. I'll give you an example. I worked in the film industry in the States, and in between jobs, these guys would willfully claim unemployment benefits, and they were okay with that until the next film gig rolls along. In between, they didn't care. They want to be so picky. They just want to work on the big name films and not bother with their little commercials and whatnot. So you have a lack when you have that safety. It takes away the incentive for you to go out there and pursue, be proactive and find those jobs. Now, granted, I'm looking way in advance. There are many other details that hopefully we'll find out when it gets tabled in Parliament in June. But and at risk of using a slippery slope argument, I think the concerns are there when we see what's happening in the States, the UK, the Australia, these developed economies, and the criticisms that are associated with this kind of security programs.
Well, I think your film industry example may be a little bit too specific and anecdotal. The question is whether this is representative of the entire society. And really, we have to go back to the question of, if you're unemployed, is it your choice or is it the choice of policy? Is it your fault or is it the fault of policy, right? That is the main question.
When you say policy, Jules, you mean that wider economy?
Is it structural? Is it structural? Is it policy, meaning has the government made it conducive all this while to allow you to have the proper education to get the jobs? It's really asking the question of, is it your fault? And if it's not your fault, should you be supported for it?
Well, this conversation will definitely continue, but we have the opening numbers from Bursa Malaysia coming up next on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.